This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under 20 bucks. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We got a rock and roll show today.
We have a great show
today. Actually, we've been rocking and rolling all week. I can't eat anymore.
I know, I'm feeling a little full. But I want to tell everybody where we've been this week, because we have really been, well, I've been really dining out very well this
week. I've been home with the dogs.
Yes, you have been. But you've had a little bit of good food this week. We went to a Stadio earlier this week where Chef Haider Karum, who happens to be in studio today, did really...
The Joey Trebbiani look-alike guy?
He doesn't look like Joey Trebbiani. But he did lay out an incredible, incredible meal for us. We also were at Graffiato last night where Mike Isabella is just killing it. The place was hopping.
The place was slammed.
And the food was delicious. I stopped by Bibiana this week and checked in with Nick Stefanelli.
Blah, 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 blah. Nick Stefanelli gave you a great meal. Where was
he? You were not with
me. Nothing came home?
No, nothing came home.
And we should mention, we were in Rogue 24.
We were at Rogue 24.
RJ Cooper's new place, and that was slammed, too.
It was slammed.
Back in that alley.
But which was a little hard to find last night. But we just had cocktails there. We haven't sat down for the 16 or 24 course meal just yet, but the restaurant's only been open for a week. Did I miss anything?
A glutton's paradise.
Did I miss anybody?
You were up in Philadelphia.
I was also up in Philadelphia. There's a lot of food this week. We hit Tallulah's Garden, which is a fabulous little restaurant. Farm to Table, which our chef coming on in just a little bit is going to talk all about what she does in Ireland.
Well, that's a good segue.
It is a good segue.
All right, so let's talk about who's on today. We have celebrated TV chef, cookbook author, and cooking school proprietress. I did it. Catherine Fulvio, she's in with us today. She's in town for an ultra exclusive, ultra secret kind of event. It's the annual Taste America event, where the Hill celebrates the last session of Congress for the summer. But I don't know that they'll be celebrating anything yet because they can't make up their minds about our deficit.
Can we get through the introductions,
yeah,
please?
Thank you. But anyways, Catherine's with us. She stole away for a few minutes to spend some time with us. Mm-hmm. We also have a guy on, Nikki mentioned, Haider Karum, who owes me $100 on a bet.
I don't think that's true.
I'll tell the story later. But he is the chef responsible for all the amazing dishes at Mark Culler's two restaurants, Proof and Estadio, both award-winning. Estadio just won the Rammy for the best new restaurant, right?
It did. So we'll get into that a little later in the show. And we'll be cooling off in studio because we have Potango Gelato in. We're going to be tasting. And also,
accidenti.
Yes. And also, we have in with us Dan Searing. He just dropped the book, The Punch Bowl. Now, when...
But that sounds like he dropped a baby.
Okay.
Did it feel that way, Dan?
At times.
They're not made the same way.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
Just oh, God, no.
Punches are a lot easier to make.
But you know, Dan, let's just break right into it. I think when a lot of people hear the term punches, they think, you know, those 1970s, like, plastic punch bowls filled with sherbet and ginger ale. But clearly, there's a lot more to punch than sherbet. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into punches?
Well, I first got really excited about punch, I guess, when I was working at Hummingbird to Mars. I was a fill-in there.
I was there.
Yep, you were there. In fact, I think we shared a table together.
That
was the first time we met.
Where was I?
You were not there.
That was a short-lived speakeasy project that was put on by some members, fellow members of mine of the DC Craft Bartenders Guild. Mm-hmm. And they served a punch as kind of an amuse-bouche. And that was the first time I'd really been exposed in a practical way to punch kind of made in the traditional, classical way, mm-hmm. sort of the... more 19th century and before style of punch. It's kind of in the years since World War II that we've gotten into the kind of ginger ale and sherbet sort of idea about punch. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more to it than that. And I'm part of a groundswell of people in the craft bartending movement who are excited about punch because it's a really directly traceable ancestor to the classic cocktails that we're all seeing so much of in the current restaurant and bar scene.
Well, so tell us about how you did your research, because, I mean, the book is quite a little piece of history about where punches began and where you see it in art books and mentioned by scholars and academics. So how did you do your digging? How did you do that?
Well, the very first published bartender's guide was The Bon Vivant's Companion by Jerry Thomas. So that's a place to start for everyone who's interested in the history of how alcoholic drinks are made and how the cocktail came to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, starting with that book and through books up into the early 20th century, even into the mid 20th century, you'll see every guide to entertaining or guide to making cocktails has punch recipes in it. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, an unpleasant little thing called Prohibition happened, and that really kind of cut off the head of the kind of the bartending world, really.
Like, it was all kind of like it was punched in the face.
Indeed, indeed.
I've been waiting like a hawk on a branch for that opportunity.
Well, so, but after Prohibition was thwarted, why didn't we pick up where we left off? What happened?
Well, there was a tremendous brain drain. All the really talented bartenders who had a connection to that history going back into the 19th century and even before. I mean, punch is thought to have originated in the 17th century in India, where English sailors started making it and taking it all around the world. But all the talented bartenders left the U.S., basically. So we had this real break with tradition, and we had, you know, hundreds of breweries. I mean, well, more than that, probably thousands, and many, many distilleries and wineries, and all of that just ground to a halt. And it's taken us really until pretty recently to get back, get a lot of those things back. I mean, obviously, wine has been back for a long time, but the craft brewing industry took a long time to come back. And
craft cocktails.
Exactly.
I mean, we're really in the full swing of it. All right, well, what punch are you going to make us first?
So the first one we're going to have is, I decided to focus today on punches that are have fewer ingredients rather than many, because you can still get a great deal of complexity of flavor. It's the summertime. We all want to be outdoors, not spending hours and hours inside laboring over ingredients. Well, I mean, many of us. I'm perfectly happy to do that, you know, 365. Right. But so the first one we're going to have today is called Jamaican Punch. Mm-hmm. It's a traditional Jamaican-style punch. It's lime juice, strawberry syrup, and rum and water. Now, traditionally, you would use a light rum. In Jamaica, they would probably use a very strong rum, like Ray and Nephew Overproof, or at least use that as a component. And then you'd garnish it with a little bit of ground allspice. Okay. What I've been doing lately is to kind of save a step.
You know what? I'm going to have to send you off to make your punch, because I need to get on to
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. I'll serve the punch right now. And we're using a spiced rum today. I'm using Corsair Artisanal Spiced Rum. It's a milder spiced rum, which saves the step of adding the allspice and makes a really fun, delicious punch.
Cool.
Excellent. Okay.
All right. So on to Catherine Fulvio. And listen, the last time I told you this before the show started, when we were in Ireland about 8 years ago, Irish cuisine was really starting to you know, I think most Americans thought it was boiled mutton and potatoes. And
we had
some amazing meals. And you're at the forefront of that whole movement. So how did all that get going?
Well, I think with Irish food, most people who visit Ireland are incredibly surprised, because they only know Irish food from the traditions of the people who've emigrated from Ireland. So they're thinking Irish stew, which is delicious if made properly. But nowadays in Ireland, we have a few things in our favour, and one is the weather. Mm-hmm. And I know most people think, oh my God, does it not rain in Ireland all the time? And there is the standard joke, you know, it rains in Ireland only twice a day, once for 12 hours and another once for 12 hours. But in reality in Ireland...
Catherine Fulvio, the comedian, is here as well.
But what we have in Ireland is actually very little frost and snow in the winter, lots of grass growth. So our grass starts growing from about early January, right through till early December. Mm-hmm. Our animals are outside grazing, our plants are growing, our clover's growing, our herbs are growing, our cattle are grazing, our lambs are grazing, we're producing great dairy produce,
great cheeses.
I know. Let's go to Ireland.
Again. Yeah.
And the thing is, we're using those produce. And what we've done in Ireland is we've looked beyond Ireland, because a lot of our young people have emigrated out of Ireland and come back again with ideas from Australia and from Japan and from America, and they're bringing ideas back home, mm-hmm. but we're using Irish ingredients with those ideas.
But do you think there's a new or a more recent pride in Irish ingredients? Because you've had the ability to have this great cattle and lamb at your fingertips for years, but again, it just seems really in the last 15 years or so that the cuisine has totally changed in Ireland. So what do you think it's people coming back in? What do you think is sort of prompting that?
I think it's people coming back in, bringing inspiration from abroad, and the Irish people have been open to this inspiration. Mm-hmm. And I also think we were quite a poor nation. You know, in the kind of 50s, 60s, 70s, we weren't all that wealthy.
And then the telecom revolution is...
Well, we joined the EU and things changed a lot. And then through our history then, it just means that people have a better lifestyle now. So they're much more open and they have the money to buy, you know, the spices and the ingredients that will go really well with those Irish cheeses.
Well, and so let me ask you, since you have all these people coming back, this was actually one of our questions. David and I were talking about this last night. Do you see the addition of other cultures mixed into Irish cuisine now? You know, people coming in from Australia or Asia or from the United States, when they come back and they're using the Irish products.
I mean, does Irish cuisine now include kebabs and yogurt?
Right. Do you know, like, are people using those kinds of... Or is other culture appearing more in traditional Irish cuisine?
It's more of a fusion.
Okay.
Rather than actually kind of saying, oh, well, you know, you go to a Chinese restaurant because that's where you get the Chinese food.
Right.
You would go to an Irish restaurant, but you'd have Chinese influences on a particular salad dressing that would go with a lovely Irish grown spinach that would be finished with, you know, organic chicken that has been steeped in the most beautiful, delicious spices that are grown in Ireland. Things, you know what grows really well in Ireland? Things like lemongrass. And do you call it cilantro, is it?
Cilantro.
Cilantro, we call that coriander leaf. They grow so well. And like, it's
Wait
not fair because they're not native Irish.
Are the same thing?
Yes, they are the same thing.
Yeah.
What do you know about that?
See, you learn something new every day.
So.
No, you don't.
All right. Well, one other thing about your bio that struck me that was very interesting, because obviously you're Irish, but your last name is Italian, and you've written a bunch of cookbooks.
Well, she's written one cookbook and she has a second one.
No, I'm saying, but you've written a lot and you've got an Italian cookbook. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, I grew up on the farm. We are from County Wicklow. My business is Ballynockan House and Cookery School. Mm-hmm. My mother opened the business in the late 60s, but the farm goes back many generations. So I have food in the blood. I grew up cooking. And then I met an Italian, a Sicilian gentleman called Claudio. And we got together and we decided we'd open a cookery school on the farm. And our very first classes we offered, it just seemed logical.
I met him. I see you got together and had some children too.
We did, yes. We have two children, one Italian, one Irish. Do you see that? The redhead in the dark. Planned that well. But we also, we decided we'd open a cookery school. And the first class we opened or operated was Italian, because Irish people wanted to learn a lot more about how to make authentic Italian, particularly Sicilian food. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. And then I got my TV series, which has been sold worldwide. And I've done two television series about Italian cookery, one from Sicily, one from Rome, where we filmed out in their countries, but made the recipes using an Irish product. And the book went along with that. My next television series is actually about family food,
and that's what your next book is, right?
It's all the rage in Ireland.
This
at the
is
moment.
The true purpose of the EU right here, the melding of...
So your next book, when you say family food, what is it, how you feature family?
It's about families, as in everybody, right through to the aunties and the uncles. Because a lot of people think family food, you know, it's cooking for little wee ones. It's not. It's the whole big group of people coming around for dinner, Sunday lunches, parties, all of that. But again, it's using ingredients coming in from abroad mixed in with Irish ingredients.
Okay, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we want to talk to people about why you're actually here in the States and what you're going to be doing here. This is Nikki and David Nellis with Foodie and the Beast.
If those people can agree.
We're going to be talking more Irish food and sipping on some punches. We'll be right back.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612, and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills. And the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hi, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking with Chef Catherine Fulvio, who's in town to cook up a storm for Taste America. Let's talk about Taste America for a minute.
It's not for the public, so what
I know,
is
it's
it?
It's a private event for Congress.
That's right. It's a private event on Capitol Hill for all the members of the House of Representatives, and it is supposed to be, I noticed the supposed to be, the celebration, the final day before they break for their summer recess. Mm-hmm. That's the plan. And that's been the plan for the last 20 years, and the first person to host it was Julia Child. Oh. So I'm the 20th person, but I'm the first chef from outside the U.S.
When you meet them, do you have to...
Well, I want to know, why did they bring you in? Do you know?
Do you know? It's a bit like yourself, been on holidays in Ireland. It's a wonderful couple, Mr. and Mrs. Rick Feeney. Rick and Barbara Feeney, they were on holidays in Ireland last autumn, and they signed up to a cooking class in my cookery school and stayed over in our guest house, and we were chatting away, and they said, we organized this event. Would you like to come over? And
that's great. And you know that every chef who does that has to talk like Julia Child. Hello! Oh, it's so good to be here.
And did Tourism Ireland, did they bring you over?
Tourism Ireland have helped me with the PR for the trip and everything. Tourism Ireland have been involved, and Bord Bia, which is the Irish Food Board, they have a big office now in New York.
Oh, okay.
And they're really going at it really hard to try and promote Irish food in the United States.
Interesting. All right.
And Tourism Ireland, of course, are telling everybody, go back to Ireland.
Right, go back.
Log on to that discoverireland.com website and see all about Irish food.
Absolutely. All right. So now how can people find you? Where can us in the States find your show? And where can we get your books? Tell us everything.
Well, my book will be, the next book, Catherine's Italian Kitchen, will be on Amazon.com in October.
Okay.
Catherine's Italian Kitchen is already on it.
It's already there.
Yeah. And also, if people want to log on to Ballynockham, it's such a mouthful, but it's the name of my home.
But you can find it. Nikki has a website. You can find it on the list or youwantit.com.
Yes,
perfect.
It's on there.
Yes,
so it's on
that's
there.
Great. And then people can email me from there. I'd be delighted to send out any Irish recipes or help anybody whatsoever with the problems they're having with their soda bread. I get a lot of emails from the United States.
About soda bread?
About soda bread and about scones. They're the two, what I would say, are the two simplest things, but they can also be the most complicated things if you make them wrong.
That is so funny. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming in, especially because you're here with your family on vacation. But it was terrific meeting you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right, Dan, I'm going to ask you to turn around and take a look at the mic.
It would be my pleasure.
Okay. This drink was so delicious. What a way to start the morning. What are you pouring next?
This one is going to be called Gin Punch a la Tarrington.
Yum, I love gin.
And it's gin, chartreuse, lemon juice, demerara sugar, and sparkling water.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I will be getting on that. And I'll be just taking a little tiny sip. But Chef, I'm going to ask you and Chef Hyder to please switch. David, you can do the intro.
I don't know. I kind of like Catherine.
I know.
Let's keep Catherine here. Hyder, here.
I think I might stay for all of
us.
Right.
Okay.
Who's that are flying around?
So, all right. So here, we got Hyder Karum in here. And it's a long story, but basically, I owe him $100 because I always thought he'd been on the show in the early days, and he bet me.
You remember that story?
Yeah, I do remember that story.
Right, he was pretending that he did not remember that it was a bet.
And as it turns out, you and Dan Searing are buddies from we didn't know this from many years ago when you were both at Asia Nora, and then you encountered somewhere along the line attorney Mark Culler, who had a dream about opening a restaurant, which became Proof, and then you guys did a stadio. How did your whole thing with Mark get going?
Mark was like a
big... how could you have seen him? I mean, he's such a hard guy to find, you know?
He stands out in the crowd.
Right.
He's like 8 feet tall.
I know.
Mark was a big fan.
And he's loud.
No. He's soft-spoken.
Yes.
He was a big fan of ours at Asia Nora. Mm-hmm. He came in probably once a week, and the relationship kind of, you know, was built from him coming into the restaurant. I met him one night. You know, I think was having dinner with a winemaker, and was walking through the dining room. He called me over. We had a little chat, and you know, became friends, and then we kind of took it from there.
So did he have an idea about Proof, or was it a collaboration? I mean, I know he knew he wanted the look, but did he know the food?
I think me and Mark kind of share, we have very similar tastes in terms of a lot of things. You know, I think we're
talking about women, or
yes,
okay. just wanted to know.
Well, he does have a reputation, but he's married now.
No, but we have very similar tastes. So, like, you know, my favorite restaurant is his favorite restaurant. You know, the things that we appreciate in food and restaurants and stuff like that.
Well, what's your background? I mean, how did you end up at Asia Nora? Are you
that's kind of a complicated story, but you know,
that classic. Sounds intriguing. Why is it complicated?
You know, I always wanted to be a chef since I was young, since I was 14. So I kind of followed a certain route to get there. So started working in restaurants in order to get into culinary school.
You gotta move up to the mic.
Went to culinary school, came back to DC, worked in like. What were the best restaurants in D.C. at the time, and kind of just worked my way up. Landed a job at Restaurant Nora, Nora Pouillon.
Which was the original
organic
farm-to-table restaurant in the city.
Yeah, I mean, she's the Alice Waters of the East Coast.
Absolutely.
You know, so, and she had a huge influence on just, you know, the way that I just think about food and, you know, cooking seasonally and organically. You don't think about it. It's just there's no other option.
All right. So when you and Mark sat down, did he have a vision for what became Proof, or did he say, "I want to open a restaurant"?
No, I mean we both had a vision. You know, it was a true collaboration of not just me and Mark, but you know of you know our GM and our sommelier, and we all like came together like as a team. And you know, I think it had a lot of different. A lot of influences from different areas. You know?
Well, so at Proof, I mean, Proof is such a wine-focused restaurant. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Mark has a incredible collection all on his own, right. And then you have the restaurant's wine. How much does your food at Proof have to be wine, like go well with wine? I mean, does it matter? I mean, when you're playing with things, are you thinking about wine?
I think it matters. It's just kind of like a matter of balance, you know. I think we cook things that we want to eat. Mm-hmm. We cook things that we would want to have a glass of wine with. And, you know, if it's a fish dish, you know, it's going to be this preparation.
You mean like the sable fish?
You know,
can you take that sable fish off the menu? What would people do?
Which I
can,
order
but,
every
you
know, time I'm in there.
Everybody would be very upset.
You hear about it.
Right, I bet.
So I mean, it's not a forced thing. You know, you're not like... You have to create this to be able to pair with this and this and this.
So you don't work with Sebi Zoutant to kind of say, okay, I'm thinking about serving this now. Are you going to be cool with that in terms of what wines you're able to bring to the table?
No. I mean, me and Sebi, we...
He's just so obnoxious. Why would you want to talk to
him? No, he's cool. He's cool. And we work on other things.
So you went from Proof, which is, I mean, it's continental cuisine, I think. Would you say? How would you explain it?
I guess so, it's hard to...
But it's not a single cuisine like Estadio, which is completely Spanish.
Right.
And especially working at Nora and Asia Nora, Spanish just doesn't seem like where you would go. How did you and Mark wind up with a Spanish concept?
We both have a love for, you know, the simplicity of the cuisine.
You just wanted a trip to Spain. I know that, right?
Right. But that's on the deal. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a very simple cuisine, and it's something that I'm very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I think I grew up in a household where the flavor profiles are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm used to things like, you know, a piece of grilled bread with a tomato, sea salt, and olive oil.
Right.
Like, that comes, it's like a natural... It's a natural move.
Well, it's also a really good way to eat.
It's delicious.
It is.
You know, it's simple. And
that's how I feel about
it. Yeah, but Estadio, I mean, Estadio is a very complex presentation, even visually. And you walk in there, I mean, that every detail's really been thought out.
Well,
so what was that process like? Did you guys say, hey, maybe we'll open a Brazilian restaurant. Maybe we'll open a Chinese restaurant. Oh, let's go to Spain and see.
I mean, in terms of that stuff, that really, you know, Mark... you know, Grande gets all the credit for that with his working with Grizz, Dwight, our architect.
But you decided to do a Spanish restaurant before any of that happened. I mean, did you guys just travel the world and say, this is what we want to do? How did that happen?
Kind of like that. We wanted that to be the next move.
And he's just cheering you on. Don't worry about it.
That's cool. I like horns.
Is that his phone or did he burp? Yeah, I don't know what that was.
So as you were putting together the menu for Estadio, were there things that you found in your travels that you're like, we got to do?
Yeah, definitely.
And now that the restaurant's been open for, what, a little?
About a year in July. Okay. So it's, you know, a little over a year.
It's hard to believe it's been, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, time flies.
But so how has the menu evolved?
Well, I mean, I think the menu kind of evolves seasonally, you know, where it just kind of follows the seasons.
Do you have trouble sourcing, you know, what would be real Spanish ingredients? Or is the world so small now that you can get whatever you want, whenever you want?
The world's kind of small. But, you know, like, for instance, Padron peppers are in season right now. So they're actually being harvested in Spain right now. But also,
Are those
the little spicy green peppers?
Okay. Yeah. What's the bowl of peppers that you... Is that those?
Yeah.
So like 1 in 10 is really spicy. Is that the deal with
one
that?
1 in 5 okay. I'm going to go with.
We had a couple last night and none of them were spicy. I was curious. Yeah.
We actually have a lady who's planted seeds for us in the spring and is growing our own padron. So it's really cool. And she's from the neighborhood. She's actually in the building that the restaurant's in.
Oh,
so,
really?
Neat.
Yeah. She's growing tomatoes, melons, and padron peppers just for
where?
Us. I believe
on her balcony?
No, I mean, she has a little farm out in, I'm going to say Virginia, but if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll hold you to it. Don't worry about it.
All right, so.
Well, let's talk about lunch and brunch, because you do lunch at Proof, but when you guys opened Estadio, do you think that was the long-term goal?
I mean, it was the long-term goal to give it a go.
Because I don't think you think 14th Street... There's not a lot of places to go for lunch.
Yeah, it's up and coming. Yeah,
yes.
It's not quite there. You know, it's not like it's downtown and you have all the buildings and the workers. You know, it's kind of more of a. I mean, I think
it
will eventually change. I think it will be a busy.
Well, that whole street is coming to life, like. Crazy,
right?
Yeah. So your crowd is a neighborhood crowd.
I think so. Yeah,
right,
think so.
And what about brunch?
Brunch, it's definitely a neighborhood thing. I mean, you know, like that's like a.
Well, we don't live in the neighborhood. We come for a brunch.
Well, that's good.
All right, I want to jump in with a question. Like Estadio just won the Rammy for best restaurant.
Okay. Best new restaurant.
Best new restaurant. Excuse me. And for those who don't know, the Rammies, I don't want to tick off Carmine's or whoever it was, but no, we need them to advertise.
Bruno coming in here.
Yeah, that's right, coming here, kick some butt. But once you get that kind of recognition, how hard is it to maintain the rep? I mean, because it's happened to a lot of restaurants where they start to, you know, inhale their own fumes and they figure,
He struck me as that kind of person. That's how I would describe
you. He was inhaling them before he came in.
That's not fair. I mean, I think our philosophy is if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So we're constantly trying to get
But how do you, seriously, how do you know, when you take staff that are lower on the food chain than you, how do you, because if they don't deliver, then the restaurant doesn't deliver. How do you keep them on their toes?
Well, I mean, first off, like, we basically started the restaurant with, like, the A team, in which it's, like, cooks who had been nurturing for many, many years and people that probably, you know, like, my chef de cuisine probably knows me better than I know me.
Well, plus, there's not a lot of turnover at Proof.
That's true. I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
I mean,
I
know every server there.
Yeah, and there's some great waitresses there, aren't there, Hyder?
There's a few.
There's a few. All right, we have to take a break.
I don't know what you mean by that.
He was dying to go there.
You
We're
don't
take
date
a break.
Any other way. Is okay.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are talking to Chef Hyder Karim of Proof and Estadio, and we are drinking punches. But later in the show, we're going to talk gelato. We'll be back in just a sec.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom, You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
The Bethesda Central Farm Market, you guys, is awesome. They close off Elm Street in Bethesda every Sunday from 9 to 1. They've got 40-plus vendors with everything from local organic produce and meats and poultry and breads and coffee and chocolate and olive oils and cheeses and more. It's really unbelievable, and it's free parking, which I really love because you know I'm cheap. So go and check it out because we go there every week. We get fresh fruit and veggies and berries from Twin Springs Farms, a lot of great organic produce from Bending Bridge Farm. The guys at Walnut Hill have free-range eggs. There's cheese from Cowgirl Creamery, cookies, muffins, and cakes from Cat's Paw. I mean, it's an amazing assortment of vendors. So go to Bethesda Central Farm Market every Sunday from 9 to 1 in Bethesda on Elm Street. They close the street off so it's easy walking around. And if you want to know more, go to BethesdaCentralFarmMarket.com. If Foodie and the Beast tell you to go, it's good.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
And we are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we have the esteemed chef, Haider Karoum, who is the man that makes it happen at Proof and Estadio here with us. And
well, Nikki I do want to ask a question. So let's talk brunch at Estadio because it's sort of recent. Talk about some of the things. And what did you bring in?
Let's talk what's here.
I know.
I've had it before.
It's delicious.
This is Pastel Vasquez, which is kind of like a Basque pound cake.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a blueberry kind of compote kind of running through the center of it.
I think that changes seasonally?
Yeah, it kind of changes with whatever fruits
what's available.
Say goodbye to this, chef.
Thank you.
So.
And what are some of the other things on the brunch menu that is different from, you know, your regular menu?
Well, I mean, there's kind of the things that most people expect, kind of, you know, breakfasty items. So we do, we kind of do fun twists on things that you normally might have for brunch. So we do like a hash that's made with potatoes and blood sausage. And then we do like, you know, a fried organic egg with that. This things that kind of, you know, they're comforting. You know, people are used to them, but they're kind of a nice Spanish twist.
They have a little Spanish influence.
Yeah.
And are you guys working, are we allowed to talk? Do you have any future projects or are there other cuisines that you're looking to explore?
I mean, there's definitely things on the horizon. Mm-hmm. You know, I think nothing is set in stone, so it's
What do you have to say? You're shaking your head.
You can't come on the radio and say that and not
Yes, he can. He can lay out something.
Come on, man.
I'm just no.
No, he's not starting any rumors.
How come Howard Stern can get information out of all of his
guests?
Because
he's Howard Stern.
He's sneakier than you are.
Right, exactly. This is delicious, by the way. Well, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
It was a pleasure.
Really good to hear about all the great things that you are doing.
It was an honor to be on the show.
I know you were worried I was going to grill you with tough questions, but
I was looking forward to it. You're a little gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Briefs
he's a gentle
or boxers.
Giant.
All right,
Dan, let's get back to you. Tell us a little bit about the gin punch we drank.
Punch is the word comes from a word in a Hindi dialect that means five. So typically punches have five components, water, citrus, spirit, spice. Let's see. Why am I forgetting one? Oh, and sugar. So some kind of sweetener. So this one is getting its spice from chartreuse, which is an herbal liqueur that's made by monks.
Okay.
Secret recipe. Incredibly complex and really goes well with gin. So we've got the lovely herbal components of the gin meshing with those in the chartreuse. And it's a delicious classical punch.
Okay. But now, in your book... Because I did read the whole thing.
Thank you.
She made me look at pictures of punch bowls.
I did. I told you. I'm desperate. I want a punch bowl now. In your book, some of the punches do not have the classic five ingredients,
right? Well, there are always exceptions that prove the rule. But usually those things are there kind of conceptually. Like we're about to have a punch called the Lagar Street Punch that has cognac, sauterne, sparkling wine and sparkling water.
Okay.
And so there you're getting some of the flavor that you would want to get from spice. We're getting from the Sauterne, which is a wine that comes from grapes that have undergone noble rot or botrytis. It's a, you know, fungus that gives them
That makes it sound so tasty.
It's, well, I mean, let's face it, like, what are some of the most delicious things in the world? Truffles and mushrooms, you know, which are also fungus in origin. So it's, you know, it was one of the most prized wines of in the world, and still continues to be, although our tastes have moved towards drier wines.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an example of a punch that kind of breaks that rule. And there are always more than one ways. There are always many ways to get to a delicious tasting punch.
Well, before you start with your next punch, I have cake all over my script. can you just talk a little bit about punch bowls? Because the book is just filled with these gorgeous pictures of these punch bowls. I mean, in my head, I think of like a plastic punch bowl with like the cups hanging on the side. And these are glorious. I mean, are they still available today?
Absolutely. You can find punch bowls from major producers of housewares like Pottery Barn and Crate and Barrel. You can get them at vintage stores like The Hour in Alexandria, where they have a collection of all kinds of vintage cocktail gear. Mm-hmm. If you want a really high-end vintage punch bowl, you can buy them at thrift stores. You can use
almost
any...
Yeah, I like the sound of that. I'm sitting here thinking about some other damn thing I have to buy now. to the thrift store.
A lot of punches you can serve out of pitchers, too. Mm-hmm. So it's
pitchers.
There's the opportunity there to have a lot of fun with it and buy a new piece of gear, but there's also an easy way to make do with what you have.
Dan, I should have prepped you before this conversation.
Well, and the punch bowls that are photographed in the book are museum quality. I mean, they're the kind of things that you wouldn't see except for in an auction catalog or the collection of a really...
You just dashed my hopes.
But you raised mine.
They all came from the collection of an upstate New York antiques dealer. And okay. I think, you know, one of the things that I feel most fortunate about is that the photography in the book of the beautiful punch bowls is outstanding. And I can claim no role in that at all. So
well, it looks
I'm just
good.
Very, very pleased with how beautiful it turned out.
All right. Well, you pour that next punch.
Okay,
let's bring in our next guest.
So, Noah Dan. Hello.
Hi.
Noah, you're a guy from Potomac. As it turns out, you are Italian, but your last name doesn't
David
sound
Italian. David was very concerned that you were not Italian.
I was going to say, why gelato?
It's something that I always wanted to do, and in that stage in my life when I'm too old to have things that I always wanted to do and didn't do. So, it's something that I started about 6-7 years ago. And it's pick up really nice.
It's a home run. So I'm gonna bet that a lot of people don't know the difference between what a gelato is and what an ice cream is.
It's basically the difference between drinking a glass of milk or eating a stick of butter.
Okay. Well, that clears everything up.
Can you explain that
thanks.
In more
thanks
detail?
For dropping in.
gelato is based on milk and very little cream added to it. It cannot be called ice cream because ice cream have to have at least 10% milk fat. And gelato, at the fattest, doesn't get to 8%, you know.
But with gelato, there are, you know, like so many things that come out of Italy have rules and regulations. Yeah. Is there any rules and regulations that go with gelato?
No, you can call a ham sandwich a gelato in this country. what's really rule it is what people expectation and what people tolerance is. Mm-hmm. So in Italy, there's a certain standard. You're going to try and run something that people are not used to. They're going to send you back home. Here, everything goes, you know.
But is there a lot more air in gelato?
No. Gelato is actually much more dense because the trick in frozen dessert is to put more fat because more fat trap more air.
Okay.
The money is in the air, of course.
Right.
So gelato is a little bit more expensive. It's denser. And also, like, the flavor characteristic is very different because if you eat anything with too much fat, it's coat your mouth after
you
a spoon
it.
Or two. You don't taste anything anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as you were putting together your gelato recipes, what were things that were very important to you? What did you want the Potengo brand to incorporate?
It's really all about ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying, I was experimenting for many years, trying to to get
I mean, were you making gelato at home anyway? I mean, were you just a gelato lover? You love to make it?
One of those, yeah.
Yeah, you're one of those. Yeah.
One of those guys.
I'm one of those, but not with gelato. Yeah.
All the neighbors are making beer, and he's home making
gelato. No, I'm a tinkerer. You know, I'm a tinkerer. Right. I'm like, what's really brought this thing about is, when you are old, is like when you know when that you're old, is like when you start talking about
I'm assuming you're looking at my husband and not looking at me, correct?
I'm just making sure.
Right.
You know, I still have to get you home safe if you know what I'm saying.
I can take a cab.
Yeah. It's when you start saying that, start bitching about the tomato that don't taste like they used to be one, you know, and like
the good old days.
So the same thing happened with the gelato in my family in Italy, where we're sitting, and I was used to come up from the same place, and it's not what it's used to be. So for my, I have a maternal aunt, mm-hmm. she had an 80-year birthday, we made for her a batch of gelato from raw milk and fresh eggs and like just the crema, just the most basic Italian custard, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just... You know, it hit me in the head. You know,
how much does it matter? I mean, is your with it on this show we talk about sourcing and all that. Yeah. I mean, where the eggs come from, where the milk comes from, the control that you have over the cow, so that you get the right milk and what the cow eats. Is that a big deal, really? Or is
absolutely,
that...
absolutely. That's all the difference, really. When you buy milk from a dairy that's already processed and so, your expectation should be very, very low. For me, that's when I saw the light, is when you really use good raw milk and fresh eggs. I mean, like, you cannot imitate it.
Can you use raw milk in your product?
If you're a dairy, if you're a licensed dairy.
Are you a licensed dairy?
Yeah, I'm licensed dairy, and I'm not serving raw milk. Don't put me in jail here.
I'm thinking you should have brought the raw milk in. I would have liked to, But I think...
It's illegal to possess in Maryland, so...
It is illegal, isn't it? Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it's strange.
So you...
I got some in my trunk.
Yeah, right. It's butter now. So you purchase your own dairy so that you can get the quality that you wanted.
I built my own dairy on an Amish, on a Mennonite farm. Yeah.
Thank you.
The gentleman is Roman Stolzfus and his family. I have 11 kids and a lovely wife. And I got to him through Nora, which I heard her name mentioned.
We actually
this show is all about Nora today. Yeah.
We bought our first Bernese Mountain Dog from one of his relatives up in Lancaster. So, all right, and so you have your own dairy on his land?
Yeah, on his. It's right next to his dairy parlor. We have our.
And what about your other ingredients? How do you source the other ingredients that you bring in?
We have for the fruits and vegetable, if you call rhubarb vegetable, mm-hmm. We get it from Amish farmers from the area. We try to stay as local as possible. Some stuff that you cannot get locally, I mean, like pistachio, we get from Bronte, Sicily.
You just have to get the best product available.
Exactly. And that's also, I mean, like when I buy from, let's say, the hazelnuts, the nocciola from Piemonte, I go there and I know the guy, and I know the guy that processed it for me. And like,
see, we're in the wrong business. He's going to Italy to check on products. Hyder's going to Spain to
Noah's
figure out
my
that
best,
thing. We're just doing
my
the
best
wrong
friend.
Thing here.
We've
we're
just
here.
Bonded here.
R&D.
That's right. So yeah, I get you some R&D right away. So you started with one location in Fells Point. I know we only have one minute here, but we'll come back. Mm-hmm. And now there are four, correct?
Five.
Five.
We just opened in Capitol Hill this year.
And is this today Washington, tomorrow the world kind of a...
Not really. I'm a great believer that if you can't manage it, you can't own it. You know, so we're running a very tight ship. And I think, I don't have like a big... plan to expand, not in the region and not really out of the region. I first want to make sure that I can manage what I have very well.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we want to talk about the flavors that you have in your different shops and why there are lines down the street to get in.
This is
David and Nikki Nellis with Fooding the Beast. We're going to be talking more sweets with Patango Gelato. We'll be back in just a sec.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612, and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We've got Noah Dan of Patango Gelato in. Before we get to tasting gelati, which is
gelato,
okay with me,
it.
I just want to thank very quickly the folks that make this show possible. Our good friends at Georgetown Bagelry with the best bagels. I wonder what a bagel would taste like dipped in this beautiful gelato. Yum.
Or no. What about with the berries?
Neighborhood Restaurant Group, especially the people at Planet Wine, a great wine store in Del Rey. And the people at Founding Farmers, John Arroyo and that crew, Farmers and Fishers down on the Georgetown Harbor, Notte Bianche Dish and Circle Bistro, which is about to reopen.
Yes, it is.
And Charles Schwartz and Son Fine Jewelers. My gosh, a jeweler.
I know.
Sponsoring this show, how nice.
I am bedecked.
Yeah, you are bedecked. And
no,
the folks at Bethesda Central Farm Market, Mitch Berliner, Wild and Crazy Mitch. So thank you all for supporting the show.
Absolutely.
So, Noah, let's come back to you. You're dishing out gelato
here. Make those
here.
Small, Noah. Those are too big.
Oh, no, they're not. Abbondanza.
So tell us about the kind of flavors you brought in today and how, I mean, because you guys don't just do classic gelato flavors. You come up with different kinds of profiles.
Actually,
how do you do it?
We actually keep very classic. In
do
other
you?
Words, we most of our stuff is like one ingredient.
Yeah.
What we have here, like for example, this is a vanilla. This is a gianduja.
Gianduja.
Gianduja is actually two ingredients. It's chocolate and.
Well, let me ask you, but isn't gianduja an Italian candy manufacturer? Because I remember gianduja chocolates.
The name actually means clown. And it's a bit of a history. I mean, like, it's a flavor that was developed during the Napoleonic War, when there was a shortage of cocoa, because it was an important ingredient. So they replaced the cocoa with a little bit of hazelnut, which was plentiful. And so the nickname is like kind of a clown chocolate. You know, it was
fake,
not taken seriously.
Chocolate.
But
right.
Since then, it's kind of like it's became like a very...
So gianduja is not a brand name?
No.
Because
no,
I used to eat those little bachi.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bachi is from Perugia. Mm-hmm. Is another region where they grow hazelnuts, and they're very proud of their hazelnuts.
Yeah. But some of your flavors, I mean, I've been in the Patango shops.
Yeah.
And like your one on 14th and P.
Yeah.
But you have flavors that are really interesting that have like herb flavors. Basil. I mean, is that classic?
No, that's not ours. Like what we have, for example, is quince. Yeah, quince is a wonderful example of something that we develop ourselves and through Amish technology and like a bit of ingenuity. I mean, like we found out a way to get the tannic flavor out of the quince by filtering it and getting this beautiful essence.
Do you have an experimental kitchen somewhere?
Well, we... it's kind of something.
I wasn't asking for a sample, but I'm happy.
is quince. But you also do sorbets too, correct?
Yeah, sorbets is a very big part of what we are doing.
Okay.
And this is like an example of.
Give this a shot.
Of a sorbet. And sorbets are fat free, and it's.
And that really matters.
It does matter, you know, because a lot of people. I mean, you know, you don't have to feel too bad about.
This is quince.
This is quince.
And it's yummy. Like almost citrusy.
Yeah. It's like that's the flavor of the quince, because usually you have quince when it's cooked.
Right.
It gets turned red. This one is quince that is actually like when you smell the fruit, mm-hmm. you have this incredible aroma of it's like a between apple and a citrus.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
All right, I'm going to jump in because we only have a couple more seconds.
Okay.
Noah, let's first of all tell everybody where your stores are and how to find you online.
At pitangogelato.com, and we have three stores in DC, one in Reston Town Center in Virginia, and the first one is still my favorite in Baltimore,
Fells Point. Right. All right, and Pitango is Pitango, if you
Correct.
Guys want to know. And if you can't spell gelato, you don't deserve to eat it.
Okay. Thank
that?
You so much for coming
no,
in and bringing all
Thanks
these delicious
so
gelatos.
All right, let's Guys. Go back to Dan.
All right, Dan, we are Searing. Back to you. So one of the punch segments of your book that I thought was interesting, because it just didn't make sense to me, was milk punches. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, I don't know why I was like, milk punches. I don't know. It sounds like something for kids, but clearly the recipes were not child friendly.
Well, there's two different kinds of milk punches. There's the one kind where you're just using milk as an ingredient in the punch, and that's sort of what you might expect. It has, the creaminess of dairy and mm-hmm. The kind of the strong flavor of the liquors that you put in. That's one style. But the more traditional style, and actually Ben Franklin famously shared with, in a correspondence, his recipe for milk punch, you use lemon juice and brandy, where you traditionally you would soak lemons in brandy, and then you add that to milk that you're scalding,
okay.
and it causes the milk to curdle, and it separates the curd from the whey, basically, and then you strain out the curd.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically, it's a whey, and that's actually can be shelf-stable.
How did they figure that out?
Well, I mean, I guess when you're doing things like discovering electricity and founding a country, like making milk punch seems like falling off a log, you know?
That's actually a very smart answer.
Well, and I also, what I thought was interesting is when you talked about some of the punches that had citrus in it, that they used them on boats, and that's what kept scurvy at bay.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, citrus was plentiful in the world of the sailor, and they were getting things like really strong rum as part of their ration, so it was a way to, you know, similar to the way gin and tonics were born, you know, it's a way to just put two things that are in your environment, one of which you need and one of which you want, and get them all together
in
something that you're going to enjoy.
That's a perfect way of putting it.
Is that how gin and tonics were born? Seriously?
Quinine in tonic water was an anti-malarial,
right.
and of course, you know, a spoonful of gin helps the medicine go down.
Oh, excellent. All right. Good to know. That's an incredible
you're
education.
You're not going to break into a song from Mary Poppins now, are you?
I'm a bartender, not a singer.
You never know.
I'm just a man.
Will you tell everybody where they can find your fabulous little book, and are you going to be doing book signings around town?
I
tell us
make
what
sure.
you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. We'll continue to be doing events in the region. I mm-hmm. live in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
so I'm going to be doing something in September at Neiman Marcus, part of their fall fashion kickoff week. I apologize,
I'll
I don't have
there.
The date in front of me, but that's going to be a fun event.
It won't matter what the date is, because she'll be
exactly,
there.
Exactly, exactly. You can get signed copies, actually, at My Bar, Room 11, which is mm-hmm. in Columbia Heights at the corner of 11th and Lamont,
mm-hmm.
at the Hour in Alexandria. You can get it at Barnes & Noble locations and also online from Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com.
It's a beautiful
it
little
is
a book.
And
it
I really do want to say also, because something we didn't mention is there's a lot of D.C. representing in that book. You talked to Gina Tresivani and Derek Brown and Owen Thompson, and you got recipes for some great people. So it's nice that you kept it a little local.
Yes, there's 25 contemporary recipes in addition to the 50 classic recipes, and many of them come from D.C. bartenders and many from bartenders all over the country, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
I just want to jump in.
Jump in.
In less than an hour, we've talked about gelati. We've talked about two of Washington's premier restaurants. We've talked about Irish cooking. We've talked about punch. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
That wants to know more should go to the list, areyouonit.com.
Absolutely.
Because this is just a sliver of everything that you can know about and enjoy and do here in D.C. It's free to subscribe. It's the list, areyouonit.com. Go there and find out what's going on.
Absolutely.
You can also actually follow Nikki on Twitter because she tweets out all sorts of, you know, more current event things. Mm-hmm. And at 10 of 1, you can listen to her on WTOP 103.5 FM. She's going to knock out some information today. What are you talking about today?
I'm talking about brunches.
Brunches!
Everybody wants to go to brunch on Sunday.
Maybe at Estadio.
Estadio is definitely on the list.
That was my Spanish accent. Never mind.
We already tried Irish. That's enough.
You wouldn't be from Estadio, would you, lad?
Okay.
All right. So
that is enough. All right. So do you want to thank our... Oh, no. We have to do our charity. Do we have a charity?
We don't. No.
Charity?
Well, no. I was going to just say because... a lot of people, you know, in the middle of the summer, they don't think about our hungry friends and neighbors out there in the community. DC Central Kitchen is really a Washington mainstay that has spread its wings and been imitated around the country. And they take foods from restaurants and food stores that normally might be thrown out, and they turn it into meals for thousands of people every day. So go to dccentralkitchen.org.
And they need volunteers.
They need volunteers.
Especially
they need
summertime.
Money. They need people to care, even in the summer. So
Absolutely.
Please think of them.
All right. And as we do on every show, we like to leave you with a little quote.
And this is a quote that Nikki found. I have no idea what it means.
I found it in the punch book.
It's a punch quote from English poet William Cowper, whose poems I have committed to memory, of course. And he said, quote, "I pity them greatly, but I must be mum, for how could we do without sugar and rum?" Dan, do you agree?
Yes.
Indeed, I do.
Absolutely.
Indeed, he does. All right, so let's thank our guests, Haider Karoom, Catherine Fulvio, Dan Searing, and Noah Dan. And next week, we've got a hot show.
We have a great show next week. Teddy Folkman is going to be in. He's been on the show quite a few times. But we are going to be talking about home brewing. That's not something we've really discussed before. And it is DC Beer Week. And if you love sushi, we got Kaz coming in from Kaz Sushi.
I can't wait.
He just opened his O Fish downtown, and he's going to be rolling up some sushi rolls for us.
Well, plus Carmine's, which took home 2 Rammies for Best Restaurant and Power Restaurant, celebrates its 1-year anniversary. We're going to have some folks in from there, maybe a special guest from Carmine's, too. A secret guest.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not sure if he's coming in. And the guys from Wildfire will be here, too.
That's correct. So we have a great show next week. We had a great show this week. Everybody else, have a delicious...
We had a fattening show.
Have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Lifelong Wells Nutritional Hour with the phenomenal Cheryl Wells.